All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is September 30th, 2025. Farewell, September. We barely knew ye. And the top story this morning, we got two of them once again. Layoffs in the oil patch starting to pile up here. Just this morning, we've got announcements. Not huge numbers of layoffs, but they're piling up. They're adding up. ExxonMobil, 2,000 laid off. That's about 3 to 4% of their global workforce. Imperial Oil, which is also partially owned by ExxonMobil, they're laying off another 900. That's 20% of their workforce. And this is in addition to recent announcements from Chevron, Conoco, BP, all laying off thousands each. They are cutting people in the oil patch. And we have this story from OPEC this morning. We know why. OPEC Plus is talking about adding even more oil production to global markets. They've been adding production for months and months amid these lower prices. I mean, oil sitting down here in the low 60s, where a lot of these companies are still profitable, but not immensely so. And we're adding more and more supply to a market that is oversaturated? It's not like the world is flooded with oil supply right now, but we're certainly in balance. Prices aren't going up, and we're still adding more and more production, even as there's worries of economic growth slowing or even economic contraction all around the world. Not really a good space for the oil majors here. It looks like OPEC is once again going to be opening up the valves, flooding the market with supply, looking to recapture market share from U.S. and Canadian shale producers who have been slowly gaining market share over the last, I don't know, 15 years or so. The last time OPEC Plus declared war on North American shale, they lost, even though it was very much a war of attrition. Nobody came out unscathed. We'll see if this one works out any different. And even as we're talking about layoffs in the oil patch, we got to talk about government layoffs. Maybe layoffs, not the right word. Government workers are going to quit. Six figures, actually. 100,000 federal employees are expected to tender their resignations today as part of the deferred resignation program, basically the buyouts, if you will, that were announced earlier this year as part of the DOGE efforts that yielded very little actual savings. Well, those workers will be hanging it up today, 100,000 of them at least. But you know what? We got layoffs in the oil patch. We got government workers quitting by the hundreds of thousands. It's okay, guys, because the government is going to shut down tonight, and we're going to stop reporting our labor statistics. All right. Who had that on their 2020s bingo that we just like stop reporting economic data right as the data gets really bad? That is some Banana Republic shit right there. I'm not, you know, I get the reasons for the shutdown and everything going on and the competing sides of the arguments. Fact of the matter is, right now, the Fed will be flying blind without that labor data, which has been deceptively strong for several years. I've been saying for a long time that our jobs market nowhere near as strong as these non-farm payrolls headlines suggest. I've been talking about how we've been losing full-time jobs, replacing it with BS part-time and gig work. And then we had that big 911,000 downward revision to the annual payroll benchmarks that hit just a few months ago. Turned out the job market was never that strong. It's getting weaker, and we're not going to know how much weaker because they're going to shut down the government and stop collecting the data. Kind of convenient there, isn't it? You know, it's like the ship is sinking, but don't worry. None of our gauges are working, so I guess it's okay. Also going on this morning, we've got an interesting story out of Poland, not something we typically talk about. JSW is the largest producer of coking coal in Poland. This story's pretty interesting because JSW, they're running out of cash. Their auditor is refusing to sign off on their books. That's pretty interesting. I don't know if that's suggesting fraud or maybe they're just being too ambitious, playing too fast and loose with the numbers. But coking coal out of Europe, this is like the intersection of several big stories of 2025, right? Obviously, you got the trade war. Coking coal is used to make steel. The first thing President Trump went after with his tariffs was tariffs on imported steel. And so if you're going to tax imports on steel, that is going to hurt the coking coal that is used to make that steel. So you got a little bit of a trade war, a little bit of a steel tariffs intersection there. But you also have to talk about Chinese demand for steel and Chinese overcapacity. There's been a lot of headlines about China's capacity problems in the last few years or last few months, especially since the trade war started. China has been ordering their miners to start reducing production. The Chinese real estate market has collapsed. They have used about half of the world's steel for the last 20 years. And well, when that collapses, you can't expect that to not have knock-on effects with things like coking coal production in Europe. By the way, we have a lot of stories about overcapacity problems in China this morning. I will be putting out a video later today about that one. I'm not going to want to miss that one. So looks like that is affecting now coal production in Europe. We've got new tariffs on lumber. This is an interesting one hit yesterday. President Trump put 10% tariffs on lumber imports and 25% tariffs on cabinets and furniture. Interesting that furniture thing there and cabinetry, because he's using Section 232 of the Trade Act of 1974. That is national security concerns. So we're putting tariffs on furniture because of national security. Okay. As if the IKEAN troops are massing along our borders ready to invade. I don't get it. I mean, I know what he's trying to do. National security cabinets, that's a tough sell. Maybe we keep our national security secrets in the cabinets, and that's why it's so important. I don't know, guys. I'm grabbing the straws here. Help me out. So that's going on this morning. We've got Robinhood shares ripped higher yesterday on growth in, we're going to do Dr. Evil's air quotes, prediction markets. All right. And when you hear prediction markets, you need to think degenerate gamblers betting on stupid shit. And that is why Robinhood is making so much money now. Well, that's pretty interesting, because put on any TV show on like a Hulu or a Paramount or anything like that. What are the commercials you're going to see? You're going to be bombarded with STD drugs, with more and more pharma commercials, dating apps, and gambling websites. That's like the only thing that's being advertised on TV right now. So we're basically a nation of disease-infested, strung out on big pharma, degenerate gamblers. All right, we got that going for us. Maybe that's got something to do with the declining birth rate. I don't know if that is a cause or the effect of a declining birth rate, but people with no future tend to run to things like that. I just throw it out there, guys. Maybe it's time to start making babies again. Just maybe. No? All right, I just throw it out there. We've got CoreWeave stock is up big this morning on a $14 billion deal that was announced with Meta just moments ago. Not a lot of details, but here's one detail. CoreWeave does not make money. So yeah, $14 billion in revenue means they're going to lose even more money supplying that compute because they don't turn a profit. But don't expect this market to care, because it's like everybody forgot making money was the point. Now, whatever. Just take your pill, bet on something stupid, and buy stock in companies that lose money. And CoreWeave's founders and Magnetar Capital, thank you for your service, because they are still selling stock every day. CoreWeave founders and Magnetar Capital. I'm told it's normal, by the way, that CoreWeave founders would be selling stock. And matter of fact, it's so normal that it happens several times a day. Okay, again, someone's going to have to explain that to me. Help me out here, folks. Charlie Javis was in the news yesterday. That's a name you might not be too familiar with, but it's a reminder that skepticism is a lost art. We're going to talk about Charlie Javis. And Fitch is warning us. Check out the wording of this note from Fitch. Fitch is warning that private credit could amplify systemic shock to the financial system. Well, doesn't that sound like something we should hurry up and dump in the 401ks of Americans and working people all over the country? Yeah, we're going to talk about that one, too, as we do every day, because they are trying to hide that crap in our retirement plans. Stick around to the end of the show for that one. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. How about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every single day. And right now, the S&P 500 is just barely in negative territory, down 5 points or 0.08% lower ahead of the opening bell. Dow futures are showing a drop of 27 points or also 0.06% ahead of the opening bell. And the NASDAQ is also negative here, down 8 points or 0.03. Stocks, all right, all three are red, but they're going a whole bunch of nowhere this morning. Market seems to not really care that the government is about to shut down. The DXY is a little bit lower this morning, 0.06 or 6 basis points lower, also 0.06%, 97.89 for the Dixie. Looking over at the bond market, we have got yields are pretty much flat, down a little bit. The 30-year is unchanged at 4.704. The 10-year is down about a point and a half to 4.127. The 2-year yield is at 3.608. That's down 2.5 points. And the 1 month is down a point and change at 4.124. Looking over at the commodities board, metals are finally taking a breather this morning. They can't all be up days here, guys. I'm not really sure what's going on in the metal space other than the fact that metals are due for a little bit of a sell-off. You may have noticed it's been kind of a crazy year for metals, kind of a crazy 2 years for metals. Spot gold is down about 18 bucks here, a little less than 0.5%, $3,816. Gold is down to 3816. Who'd have thought we'd be saying that in 2025? Meanwhile, spot silver is off by almost 80 cents, 1.7% lower, at $46.13. But regardless, I like the shiny. Copper down by 1.25% here. Platinum is down 2% and change. Palladium is down almost 2%. And crude oil is down 1.3% here, 84 cents lower to $62.61 for November WTI futures. Put a pin in that oil thing there. We'll be talking about that in just a moment. But back to gold real quick. I saw an interesting story here this morning. India's September gold and silver imports nearly doubled despite record prices, sources say. This is interesting. India's always been a big fan of gold. I've been hearing increasing amounts of chatter about Indian demand for silver as well. Maybe those higher prices in that gold to silver ratio driving some of that traditional gold demand into the silver space. But regardless, the world's most populous country is buying up metal hand over fist. India's imports of gold and silver nearly doubled in September from August, defying record high prices as banks and jewelers rush to build inventories ahead of festivals and escape higher taxes on imports, trade and government sources said. Nearly doubled. All right, so the world continues to move to gold and away from the dollar. Meanwhile, Bitcoin is sitting here around $113,065 as priced on Coinbase. Now, we had a pretty good day yesterday. We went as high overnight as $114,850. We're now down quite a bit off those levels here. You notice here, if we zoom in a little bit, guys, Bitcoin is kind of flirting with its 50-day moving average, broke above it, failed the first retest, currently showing down about $1,200 or $1,300 from yesterday. Keep an eye on Bitcoin, guys. As always, I will repeat, be careful on leverage. Crypto winter just around the corner. All right, let's talk about this one here in Newsweek this morning. This is a pretty interesting story. Largest mass resignation in U.S. history as 100,000 federal workers quit. And when you hear mass resignation, it kind of makes you think like it evokes feelings of like protest and walkouts. That's not what's going on here. This is actually a buyout. Some 100,000 federal workers are set to formally quit the U.S. government in what will constitute the largest mass resignation of government workers in U.S. history. The resignations, which come as part of a program drawn up by President Trump at the start of his second administration, will happen on Tuesday, as Congress is facing a deadline on the same day to authorize more funding or risk a government shutdown. That second paragraph there is a little deceiving. This has nothing to do with the shutdown. This was a previously announced program. It just happens to coincide with the government shutdown. That actually is a coincidence, believe it or not. The planned 100,000 resignations come as part of this program known as the Deferred Resignation Program, or DRP. Government goes drip, drip, drip. According to the Senate Democrats' report in July, DRP will cost $14.8 billion as 200,000 workers will be paid their full salary and benefits while on administrative leave for up to 8 months. Now, I believe what's going on here, I believe these workers have been on administrative leave for the last 8 months And that leave is now running out, and so they are now submitting their resignations effective immediately. I believe that that is how it works. Don't quote me on the timing of this, but here's the thing. Those 100,000 jobs, those 100,000 people going away, if their severance runs out, that means they would start to show up on the non-farm payrolls on the monthly jobs report, if not for the September month, certainly for the October month. Now, I don't think this would happen in time to affect the non-farm payrolls report that's expected on Friday. Emphasis expected. We're probably not going to get it. But it would probably show up by October. Now, the reason why I said it's expected is because with the government shutdown, they're not going to have a non-farm payrolls report on Friday because the people who issue the report are not getting paid and they're not going to work. So I'll be honest with you, Friday morning on the live stream, I don't know what the hell we're going to do. Maybe I'll just sing the Mr. Rogers theme song and we'll all pretend like we're looking through a jobs report in the land of make-believe. I don't know, but how the hell do you determine policy and, you know, interest rates and all this other stuff at the Federal Reserve without a jobs number, which everybody says is the most important? I guess we're going to find out. 2020s, this decade does not quit. Meanwhile, Imperial Oil to cut 20% of workforce as crude prices drop. This is one of two big layoff announcements this morning. Imperial Oil plans to trim its workforce by about 20% by the end of 2027 as the global crude market faces a potential supply glut. Imperial will consolidate activities to its operating sites and enhance its operational focus, the producer said in a statement on Monday. Now, by the way, consolidate activities to its operating sites, that kind of suggests these layoffs will be more like white-collar back office kind of thing, not the roughnecks working in the oil patch. As a result, the company expects to record a one-time restructuring charge of approximately $330 million Canadian dollars or $237 million U.S. That's before tax in the third quarter of 2025. The changes will result in the reduction of approximately 900 positions, the majority of which are in Calgary, an Imperial spokesperson said by email. Not a big U.S. story, but it affects our neighbors to the north in Arctic Mexico. Meanwhile, Exxon to cut 2,000 workers as oil sector job losses mount. So this one probably will affect U.S. people. ExxonMobil plans to cut about 2,000 jobs globally, not all in the U.S., as the Texas oil company consolidates smaller offices into regional hubs as part of its long-term restructuring plan. Once again, it looks like white-collar folks are the targets of layoffs here. Smaller offices are being consolidated into regional hubs. The reductions represent about 3 to 4% of Exxon's global workforce and are part of the company's ongoing efficiency drive, CEO Darren Woods said in a memo to employees on Tuesday. Calgary-based Imperial Oil, which is 70% owned by Exxon, announced Monday that it's also cutting it 20% of its workforce. See earlier article. Chevron, ConocoPhillips, and BP are among major oil companies to have also announced thousands of job cuts in recent months as crude prices tumbled this year in response to increased supplies from OPEC and its allies. So more oil supply hitting oil prices, and oil workers are getting laid off because of it. And guys, get used to it. It's probably going to get worse before it gets better because we got this one. This is just 2 days ago. OPEC Plus seen as likely to approve another output hike for November. So if we're already losing workers because supply is increasing, well, they're going to increase it even more. Probably means more layoffs are coming. OPEC Plus will likely raise output. Oil. Jesus, I butchered this. Let's start it over. OPEC Plus will likely raise oil output again in November as the group continues its strategy to reclaim global market share, according to people familiar with its plans. Are those people related to the familiar with the matter family, I wonder? Those people familiar with the plans? I don't know, but I digress. The alliance led by Saudi Arabia will consider adding at least as much as 137,000 barrels a day as a hike scheduled for October when it meets online on October 5th. That's just a few days from now. They asked not to be identified as the talks are private. So this is a smaller addition, this 137,000 barrel a day hike. They're going to add this every month for the next few months. Not a huge hike. And it's also worth pointing out that some of the production increases that we've actually seen, like the amount of actual oil flowing, has been smaller than the announced output hikes because some of these countries are having trouble meeting those production targets. You got Ukrainians are blowing up Russian oil refineries and infrastructure with their drone attacks. That's affecting Russian output. We've got some countries are struggling due to scheduled maintenance or other problems, labor disputes. So just because you hear about another output hike doesn't mean that number of barrels is actually going to flow. That's just what OPEC Plus is raising the quota by. And another story that is suggesting some shrinking economic activity, JSW sinks the most since 2023 as the coal miner faces a cash shortage. Cash shortage in Poland, that's a new one. Shares in Poland's largest coking coal producer, JSW, dropped after the firm said it may run out of cash in 6 months without external help, and its auditor refused to sign off on the conclusions of its latest results. That is not a good sign when your auditor is refusing to sign the dotted line. State-controlled JSW, whose net loss shrank to 2.09 billion zloty, or $574 million, in the first half of 2025, down from 6 billion a year earlier, is suffering from a high wage bill amid unfavorable market conditions for its output, which is used in steel manufacturing. The stock fell as much as 9.9% on Tuesday, the most since late 2023. This company is based in a city I'm not even going to try to pronounce, but they have almost used up its entire rainy day fund and introduced efficiency measures to raise cash, but they turned out to be insufficient. The firm's auditor said that JSW's assumptions regarding continued operations over the next 12 months depend too much on actions by third parties. So what the auditor is saying here is pretty crazy here. They're refusing to sign off because the auditor, PricewaterhouseCoopers, by the way, is saying you guys don't have enough money to make it another year. I mean, that sounds an awful lot like a going concern. You can't make it another year. What you're saying, like all of these assumptions, they're dependent on some external action that you don't control. I'm not going to sign. Now, guys, I think the trade war is probably playing a role here. U.S. has gone after foreign steel production, and foreign coking coal will be affected by that. U.S. wants more of a domestic steel industry. I can't help but think this is also being affected by the slowdown and the collapse of the China real estate market as well. We've seen a lot of stories about the Chinese trying to force the shutdown of some of their steel mills and some of their coking coal producers worried about overcapacity, something I'll talk more about later today. Now we've got coal producers in Poland. Can you see the trade war? Can you see the collapse of the Chinese real estate market? It is affecting the entire global economy here. Meanwhile, President Trump sets a 10% tariff on lumber imports and 25% on cabinets and furniture. U.S. President Trump said on Monday he was slapping 10% tariffs on imported timber and lumber and 25% duties on kitchen cabinets, bathroom vanities, and upholstered furniture, continuing his tariff assault on global trading partners. The action is the first in three sectors that Trump said last week would get steep new duties as early as October 1st. Including patented pharmaceutical products, heavy-duty truck imports. Monday's proclamation sets the start of the lumber and furniture duties 2 weeks later, which would be October 14th. Trump signed a presidential proclamation laying out his argument that timber, lumber, and furniture imports are eroding U.S. national security to justify the new duties under Section 232 of the Trade Act of 1974. Trump's increasing use of Section 232 comes as he awaits a Supreme Court ruling on the legality of his broader reciprocal tariffs on global trading partners, which two lower courts have struck down. The proclamation said the tariff rates would start on October 14th, but added that duties would increase on January 1st to 30% for upholstered wooden products and 50% for kitchen cabinets and vanities imported from countries that failed to reach an agreement with the United States. Trump's proclamation said wood product imports were weakening the U.S. economy, resulting in the persistent threat of closures of wood mills and disruptions of wood product supply chains and diminishing utilization of the U.S. domestic wood industry. So that one's also going to take a chunk out of home builders, by the way. Home builders are in trouble lately with the frozen real estate market. Tariffs on lumber and cabinets certainly not going to help that industry. Meanwhile, Robinhood shares climbed 12% on growth in prediction market trades. What a bunch of degenerate gamblers we are turning into. Robinhood market shares rose 12% after CEO Vlad Tenev said the online stock brokerage has made strong inroads in prediction markets where people wager on elections, sporting matches and other widely followed events. The executive said in a post on X on Monday that Robinhood customers have now transacted more than 4 billion of such event contracts, 2 billion of which were in the third quarter alone. Betting on prediction markets came to prominence during the 2024 U.S. presidential election, when platforms such as Kalshi and Polymarket facilitated millions of dollars in wagers on the outcome. Robinhood has seen it as a source of growth, and the proliferation is blurring the lines between financial markets and the gambling industry. So you can add that one to the zero DTE call options phenomenon. It's not investing, guys. It's just gambling. Call it what it is. But Robinhood stock was up over 12% yesterday. It's down about 0.8% this morning, giving back a little bit of those gains, but trading at $135.60. Meanwhile, my favorite company in the world, CoreWeave, stock climbs 8% after the company lands a $14 billion deal with Meta. Guys, this story just broke a few minutes before I went live, so there's no details. That's basically it right there. The stock is up on a $14 billion deal with Meta. I can tell you guys, CoreWeave doesn't make money. CoreWeave supplies its compute at a loss. So a $14 billion deal, it's going to increase their revenue, but it's going to make their cash burn even worse. But you know what? Nobody cares about making money. CoreWeave stock up now 11.3% ahead of the open. $136.30, up almost $14 on this deal. CoreWeave is a zero long-term. The only way this company avoids bankruptcy in the next 5 years is if somebody buys them to prevent that bankruptcy. I got my eye on you, NVIDIA. When will NVIDIA make a defensive acquisition of CoreWeave in order to keep their bubble alive? Probably within a year or two. All right, let's talk about this one here. Let's talk about the Forbes 40 Under 40, Charlie Javis. This one goes all the way back to 2019. There's Charlie Javis right there. She's this up-and-coming, strong female lead CEO. They're telling this story about all her struggles with college finance and how her experience inspired her to create Frank, which she likens to preventive medicine for student loan debt. Frank aims to help students avoid financial disaster. The software guides students through the free application for federal student aid, enabling them to complete the form within minutes. Javis says the program breaks down the tough form into easy steps, just like TurboTax does for the Form 1040. Students can see which scholarships and loans they're eligible for and understand what it will mean to take on debt that they're considering. So far, the program had helped 300,000 students unlock $7 billion in financial aid. And so because of this up-and-coming student loan fintech app, Charlie Javis was named to the Forbes 40 Under 40 in 2019. That was then. Let's check in on how it's going now. Charlie Javis gets 7 years for defrauding J.P. Morgan. Oh, she's going to prison. Did not see that one coming. Charlie Javis was sentenced to 85 months behind bars for defrauding J.P. Morgan Chase in its $175 million acquisition of her student finance startup, Frank. This happened just yesterday. A New York jury convicted Javis in March, finding that the one-time entrepreneur had lied and faked user data to mislead the nation's biggest bank into believing her site had more than 4.25 million users when it actually had fewer than 300,000. She actually created fake user data in order to inflate the price for her app. And by the way, J.P. Morgan Chase bought this hook, line, and sinker. Where was the DD at J.P. Morgan, the world's biggest bank? What did they pay for this? Was it $175 million? $175 million, the world's biggest bank, handed over to Charlie Javis for her company, and they didn't open up the books and realize that all of the user data was fake? How hard could it have been to find that? And the reason I mentioned this, guys, is, you know, we're sitting in the middle of this bubble right now where anybody can say anything about AI and people will automatically pile into their stock. Anybody can say anything about becoming a shitcoin treasury company, people will pile into their stock. There is no skepticism anywhere. Nobody is asking questions, and this is a perfect example of that. As a matter of fact, people who do ask questions are being like mocked and ridiculed and pushed out of markets, and you know, the press is running articles say don't pay attention to these randos, or Bloomberg is filing their BS copyright claims on Gamers Nexus to shut down their research into what NVIDIA is doing with their illegal search to China. isn't it the job of the financial journalism industry to ask questions like this instead of just propping these people up and putting them on a pedestal like this happened, the 40 under 40? By the way, this was Crane's New York Business, not Forbes. I think I said Forbes 40 under 40. This is Crane's that did this. Nobody asks any questions anymore. Gotta love it. But we ask questions here, and we're asking a lot of questions about private credit. We've been spending a few minutes on this every show. We're going to do it again today. Private credit could amplify shock in the next crisis. Fitch says it's nice to see the ratings agencies finally showing up to the private credit party. Private credit could be a meaningful transmission channel during the next crisis. What does that mean? I don't know. Amplifying a systemic shock to the financial system with negative repercussions for a broad range of investors, according to Fitch Ratings. Wow, look at all the buzzwords and confusing financial lingo in that. It could be a meaningful transmission channel during the next crisis, amplifying systemic shock to the financial system with negative repercussions for a broad range of investors. All right, maybe we simplified this. Things in private credit are so effed up that it's going to mess with everybody, even ordinary people. Why can't Fitch just talk like that? Why do they have to say a meaningful transmission channel or amplifying repercussions? The fastest growing asset class has already exhibited bubble-like attributes, including financial innovation. By the way, financial innovation, that's like creative accounting. Yeah, red flag, danger, Will Robertson. Heightened competition, growing retail participation, and rising leverage. The ratings firm said in a report on Monday, the private sector warrants continued close monitoring and would benefit from increased transparency. How about any transparency? That would be nice, the Fitch analyst wrote, arguing that more consistent disclosures would help market participants gauge risks and resilience. And by more consistent disclosures, it means be honest that these companies can't pay you back and that they're not worth what you're saying they're worth. More consistent disclosures, increased transparency. Stop freaking lying. That's what they're saying. In spite of this, Fitch said it does not currently view the risks associated with private credit as systemic. What? You just got done saying a transmission channel amplifies shocks, financial systemic risk, but you're like, oh, but don't worry, it's not a problem. That's because the $1.7 trillion market still represents a small slice of the financial system and relies on funds that typically have committed capital and moderate leverage. You just told me there was too much leverage. You told me it was a risk and then told me it's not a risk. And then you told me it's small because it's only, asterisk, $1.7 trillion. This is the most bipolar warning, not warning, danger, not danger I have ever seen from a ratings agency. But guys, you kind of can you can see where they're going with this, right? They realize this problem is huge now. They realize it's being stuffed into people's 401ks and that eventually when this pops, people are going to be pissed off. Well, we better sneak some kind of like softly worded note out there so we don't look like we're behind the times. But at the same time, let's make sure the language is soft enough that we don't spook people and accidentally cause the bubble to burst that we're warning about. And that's what gives you this note from Fitch. Just a reminder, guys, they are trying to dump all of this garbage into your 401k and your IRA because private equity needs a bag holder. Don't let them do it. Thank you very much to Nashville Pasta Man, who says Trump could refill the SPR. Nope, let's prop up Argentina. I do think we're going to end up refilling the SPR. I think they're waiting for lower prices, which we're probably going to get. Argentina, that's a pretty crazy story. President Trump, I mean, if you go look at the decline of the Argentinian peso, it started in April right around Liberation Day. So, you know, the tariff war, the trade war that President Trump launched started a global dollar shortage because most countries get their dollars by trading with the USA, which runs a huge trade deficit, which means we supply dollars to the whole world. Argentina, by the way, still suffering from freaking decades of socialist rule under the Peronist governments. I mean, if you look at the decline of the peso, yes, it has declined sharply over the last few months, but zoom out on that chart. All right. The next time you see some Bloomberg article talking about how Milei's chainsaw has failed, zoom out on the chart and look what the Peronists did to the peso before Milei got in power. Look how Milei slowed the decline of the peso it dramatically slowed it. Although since the trade war was announced, it has reaccelerated. All right. That doesn't mean libertarian philosophy has failed. Now, the U.S. is bailing out Argentina. We're doing this swap line. We're giving them dollars. The Chinese are buying a bunch of soybeans from the Argentinians. So there are dollars flowing into Argentina now, which they'll probably use to prop up the falling peso. The question is it enough? And I would also add that the decline in the peso really hit its stride a few weeks ago when Milei's party lost that local election outside. I don't remember what the name of the province was, but there was a local election and the Peronists won by a huge margin. And that scared the crap out of people and made the decline of the peso worse. So, I mean, if you think things are bad in Argentina now, hand control back over to the Peronists and watch what happens. Good God. But yeah, they should be refilling the SPR. I would wait for it to go a little lower. Honestly, I wouldn't start refilling the SPR until we get into like the low 50s, high 40s. And then if we get down into the 20s again, I'd be buying oil hand over fist. I don't care if we need to make another, hollow out another salt cavern and fill it with oil. In the 20s, you should be buying it hand over fist. Thank you very much, Nashville Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. And thank you, T.A. Chapman, for gifting 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Thank you so much, T.A. Chapman. Welcome to the Melonheads, you 20 wonderful people, you. Hey, don't be afraid or don't forget to thank T.A. Chapman for those memberships in the comments. Thank you, T.A. I appreciate that. And just a reminder, guys, that if you are a member, you get one free super chat a month. Feel free to use that, and I will read and respond to your questions and comments live on the air, as I will now do for Alias Jones. Hello, Alias Jones, you questionably named individual. You gotta protect our armoiries. I love it. Yes, the IKEA forces are massing on our border. Rally the armoiries. I see what you did there. I like it. Yeah, all right. All right, dad jokes for 1,000, Alex. Thank you very much, Alias Jones, for supporting the channel and for making me giggle. Nacho Man Randy Savage says, prayers for It's from Canada. Uh-oh, Nan, what's going on with Nan? Nan, I hope you feel better. I didn't even see that there. I missed a lot in the chat. I can't go back through it. But thank you so much, by the way, while we're on the subject. Nan, I hope you feel better. And thank you so much for everything you do for the channel, as well as Mission M&J, my channel mods. They are awesome. They do a lot for the channel. Being a moderator is a thankless job, but I say thank you. So now it's a slightly less thankless job. Now it's just a thank job. Thanks again, Nacho Man, for supporting the channel. Feel better, Nan. And T.A. Chapman says, happy furlough day, Jack. Over under 30 days this time, I expect it to be about mid-November when people start crying about holidays and pay. We'll see. We also need to fire 400,000 more employees and all that. Happy Tuesday. I wonder where you got the 400,000 number from, but I would add, guys, that the federal government is not a jobs program. So if we're all like, oh my God, like reducing the federal workforce is bad for the economy because people won't have jobs, that's not what the federal government's supposed to do. Federal government is just supposed to like stay out of the way and let the economy do its thing, not be the economy. So this shrinkage in the federal government, long overdue, if you ask me, long overdue. How long will the shutdown last? I don't really know, to be honest with you. What the hell do they even want? They want to extend these Obamacare subsidies, right? This was part of the COVID stimulus, right? The American Rescue Plan, all the money we printed for COVID. This was Biden's big. I don't know if it was Biden or Trump did it. I don't know who did it. I'm guessing it was Biden, but don't hold me to that. It was one of the big COVID bills, which they both did, by the way. Reminder, both parties printed and spent money like crazy this decade. But now the shutdown appears to be over. Those COVID stimulus subsidies for Obamacare premiums are set to expire on January 1st. And the Democrats are shutting down the government to make that permanent. That's what they're asking for. COVID stimulus. What the hell? I got to say, what the hell? All right. And by the way, Obamacare, like, are we still even calling it the Affordable Care Act? Has anybody seen what the cost of healthcare has done since it became affordable? Has anybody seen that? What are we even talking about? This is so freaking stupid. So stupid. But you know what? Hey, don't threaten me with a good time. You want to shut down the government? Shut down the freaking government. I don't care. It'll make the live show on Friday a little more difficult. We might have to be creative and just kind of imagine what the jobs number might have been. I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Thank you very much, T.A. Chapman, for supporting the channel, sir. And Zeeble Fritz, thank you, sir, for being a Melonhead member for 16 months. He says, please add uranium price to my commodities list. You know, uranium is not something I typically follow. I can tell uranium has done really well these last couple of years. Be careful in uranium, guys. Your fate is tied to the AI bubble now. I know uranium investors have done really well. I know there's plenty of other macroeconomic forces that suggest uranium is going to continue to do well here. But when this AI bubble bursts, all these stories about fusion reactors 3 years away, yeah, right. All these companies that don't even have design certification from the NRC that are claiming they're going to build reactors in 2 years, never going to happen. Never going to freaking happen. And uranium's going to crash when that happens too. So just be careful with that one. Understand what you're invested in. You're invested in the same AI bubble that everybody else is invested in. Gordon Guanu. Oh, by the way, guys, let me just say, I am not anti-nuclear. Like you guys know, I used to work in nuclear power. I believe strongly in nuclear power. I think we should be building more nuclear reactors, mainly to replace other forms of energy. That being said, the market is what the market is. And when AI demand goes away, bye-bye. Gordon Guanu, thank you, sir, for supporting the channel, says maybe JSW should retool and start making screen doors for the Polish Navy. All right. Man, we haven't had any good Polish jokes in a long time yet. I mean, are we not allowed to make Polish jokes anymore? I don't know. They were all the rage in the 80s when I was a kid. But, you know, we're not allowed to make fun of people anymore. But I think, you know, Polish, they tend to be pasty, you know, like me. So I thought you're still allowed to make fun of them. So we can do the Polish screen door on the, how do you sink a Polish submarine? You knock on the door. Yeah. And we've all heard that one. Thank you, Gordon Guano, for supporting the channel. Tom Dillon says, Jay Huang went a kajillion dollars too far with his OpenAI deal. And now the round-tripping grift you've been sounding the alarm about for 3 years, it's actually been two, but yeah, who's counting, for 3 years is getting attention. The revenge of the rando is at hand. By the way, speaking of the AI bubble, did you see there was an article on CNBC yesterday? Here's why Jim Cramer says AI isn't a bubble. And I took a screenshot of that title and I just posted like, you guys believe me now? Now that Jim Cramer's saying it's not a bubble, now do you freaking believe me? Like, it's just daring it to pop. I agree. They took it way too far. Honestly, Tom, it really is crazy. It took, I shit you not, 5 minutes back in 2023 when I first heard the name CoreWeave. It took me 5 minutes to figure out what they were doing. It was so obvious from the get-go. How could we, so many millions of people, have been so freaking stupid to let it get so bad? I don't know, but there's going to be plenty of time to Monday morning quarterback this shit after it bursts. The question now is just how much damage is it going to do? And I shudder to think at how much damage this is going to do because the average person is so ridiculously overweight, the same six or seven freaking stocks, and they're all going to try to sell at the same time. Good God. How did we let it get so bad? I don't know, but thank you for the generosity, Tom Dillon. I appreciate the super chat, sir. Hey, here's Tom again. Thank you again, Tom. He says, on January 1st, gold was $26.24. It didn't just break through that 3,000 resistance. It pole vaulted over it. Pet rocks for the win. Yeah, Tom Dillon. I love it. I like the shiny. I don't have any gold handy here, but I do have my little Murica silver bar here. Yep. You know, a lot of people had some very ambitious gold targets for 2025. And well, we hit those by like March of this year. And again, gold going up in a straight line, guys, it's down today, but gold going up in a straight line should be telling you something. Thanks again, Tom Dillon, for supporting the channel, sir. T.A. Chapman says 700,000 total back in March, only 300,000 so far. What's the 700 to 300,000? I'm not sure. What did we talk about 700,000? Can somebody help me out with that number? T.A. Chapman, I'm sorry, buddy. I don't remember what we were talking about here. Let me give it a second. Somebody let me know. What is the 700,000 back in March, only 300? Is that layoffs? Is that like government employees that we're going to – yeah, jobs. Okay. 700,000 back in March, only 300,000 so far. So it's a reference to jobs. Look, guys, we don't know how bad the job market's going to be. We get JOLTS later today. That will get reported. And it looks like JOLTS is going to be the last government labor data that we get before the shutdown. Who knows how long the shutdown lasts. It may be the last labor data we get for a while. We do get ADP private payrolls tomorrow. That's not a government statistic. So we'll get that. And then that's it. That's it. Other than anecdotes about layoffs, that's going to be all the job data we get until they fund the government. So, we will be kind of flying blind here a little bit. But, you know, the nice thing about flying blind is you can just go back to using your own eyes and ears instead of government gaslighting statistics. And you can just make up your own mind and you can say, like, well, I've been looking for a job for 8 months. I've applied for 300 positions and have gotten a call back from precisely zero of them. Therefore, the job market is weak. Or you can be like, well, CNBC says the job market is strong, even though nobody can find a freaking job. Well, maybe without that government data, we actually open our eyes and go outside and touch grass and realize, oh, crap, things are worse than we thought. Hey, I just throw them out there. You guys do what you want with them. Thank you very much, T.A. Chapman. Sorry, I got a little confused by the numbers there. And I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Come on back tomorrow. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm. You're new guys, so we can see you tomorrow morning. I appreciate that. Hey, thank you so much for all the super chats and the generous support of the channel. I appreciate that as well. Also, you guys, my magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon and YouTube, you guys rock. I got links down below to all that good stuff. Should you feel so inclined, hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.